condition of being human is negative, and the planet suffers from the negative condition of being human, and our commitment is to be with it in such a way that we can transform it. And that we, you know, by transformation we mean altering the very fundamental nature of something. We are about altering the fundamental nature of being a human being, which is a very negative bias. Takes you a long time to work up to it, because we think being a human being is just like the naturally how we are, and that's how we are, it's how we're always going to be. You know, but every day it seems that we are faced more and more with the tragedy of our human negativity in the world. No one can hide from it anymore. The explosion of the technology, human beings could live in great denial about our cruelty and our violence and our inhumanity to each other because we weren't exposed to it. But now man's humanity to man, with the explosion of technology, there's no way to hide. We see it day in and day out, the cruelty that we are. Ugly reality is in our face moment by moment. So we as a board and as a corporation, Joanne Gaga, our board president, went through hours of labor and frustration and work and got us to become a nonprofit. We're actually an official nonprofit organization, which means, and I think this is really important for you to know as we talk about what we want to share with you later, any money that we collect from your donations, any donation that we get from workshops that you pay for, that money goes to the teachers, it doesn't go to us. But we always get a little donation, goes into our kitty, which Judy Kuchenmeister fiercely manages, and that money goes in to providing scholarship funds and bringing this work into the world. We're all volunteer. We do not get paid for what we do, and we do it because of our passion for the work. Because we individually want to have the deepest meanings in our lives that we can, and we want to make a positive difference in the world. It's not just about our own individual transformation. So when we say transformation, what are we talking about? I feel like I have to do this review at the beginning of every year. When we talk about transformation, we are talking about altering the fundamental nature of something. And what we are seeking to alter is the fundamental nature of the condition of being a human being, which has an enormously negative bias. That's just the way we are. We have been conditioned as a species to be judgmental. Recognize that in yourself. Cruel, grasping, materialistic, uncaring, hateful. And we're not really talking about those other people out there. We're talking about ourselves, you and me. It's really interesting how the different ways that we wear our negativities. Is Death coming in? There's a seat up here and here. It's funny how some people wear their negativities on the outside. What do you know, someone like that? They're always, you know, bitching and complaining and cranky and negative and contracted. They wear their negativity on the outside. I'm not saying this is better or worse. It's just how they're designed. They wear it on the outside, and it's almost like they're punishing the rest of the world for their suffering. But they're just cranky and negative. Then there is the second population of us who hide, right, Linda, how negative we are. She's our poster child for hidden negativity. And I'll join your ranks right with you, honey. You're up there with good company. And this one, you know, we all fall into one of these categories, okay? I'm just using my beloved Linda for an example. And we put on this face, this mask, you know, that I'm good and kind and I love everything and everybody all the time. We're hiding how negative we are, you know, because we're ashamed of it and we don't want to face up to it. And then there's another population of people who hide their negativity by actually rejecting it. Rejecting it so fiercely that they don't even know it. They've sent it away out of consciousness. I mean, that's it. We alter ourselves and more light and goodness starts to enter into who we are. We don't have to try to be good. That's fake anyway. If we remove our negativity by recognizing it and owning and telling it the truth about it and being transparent with it, this miraculous process occurs that the true instinctual inevitable planted into us by God goodness that we are starts to infuse our personalities little bit by little bit by little bit. And the guide calls this answering our call to God. So lest we despair about all of our negativities, let me assure you, we also have a great instinctual, natural goodness in us as well. Loving, compassionate, merciful, kind, all the positive traits and goodness in the world, get this, live also within you, within each of us. That's the good news. But this goodness is blocked by the fact that by the very condition of being human, which means that we are threaded through and through with egotism, we're tied up with prayer. And it's that pride, and it's that very pride that makes it difficult for us to face up to our faults and our shortcomings. And so we go around and around in circles, not facing our negativity. And the price we're paying is that we're cutting off the beautiful, loving, tender, kind beings that we are. You know, and our drive as human beings to defend and justify ourselves, I think, is one of the most powerful forces on the planet. Really and truly. You know, somebody can say, you know, that there's a tear in your skirt. No, there's not. Or, there's a tear in your skirt. Well, I bumped into the door. You know, we can't just say, oh, you're right, I have a tear in my skirt, you know? It's like pride won't let us do that, and that's a silly example. So, a major point here is when the guide from Pathwork emphasizes that it's not that we have these problems, this is comforting to me. It's rather that we either buy into them, we agree with them, we justify them. For instance, the reason I hate is because she hurt me, you know? Or we defend our negativity. We say, I'm self-centered, I'm a human being. Who's not self-centered? Or we deny them and we own them and we exile them and send them underground. So the wonder of Pathwork is that it teaches us that we all have a lower self. Now get this, that hates and blames ourselves and hates and blames the others. Is there anyone in the room who cannot identify with that? Right. That's how we're designed. It's the condition of being human. And so what we can learn is rather than buying into that, we can see how limited and pitiful and pathetic it is. And I love the line from Rilke when he says, maybe that helpless, broken thing in us is what is needing help from us. It's needing our help. our correction, not our rejection, not our judgment. And again, the miracle is that when we can do that, then there is a natural goodness that starts flowing into our lives. We don't have to try to be good. We are good. We're just cut off from it. We don't have to be loving. We are loving. We're cut off from it by all of this crap that we in Pathwork spend a lot of time taking a look at. So you will notice on this first flyer an announcement of a one-day workshop titled Fences, and you have a flyer on your seat. Hopefully you read it. And, you know, I'm going to stick my neck out and take a little bit of a risk here because I'm so reluctant ever to, like, promote and think that you feel like you are being dragged into something. We are not trying to get your money. We don't need your money. We're not trying to get your time. You know, we really aren't. We're not trying to extract from you a higher level of commitment than you want to make to Pathwork. I as the spiritual director and your board of directors, are absolutely, totally committed to create opportunities for you to take the next step and bringing into your life another glimmer of light and hope and freedom and empowerment. We care about that. And, you know, can we offer you workshop experiences without your feeling, oh, they're just trying to get my money, they're just trying to take my... No. We are creating opportunities for you to take the next step. The guide says that one of our issues is that we can become very fascinated with these Pathwork principles. That they're interesting, and somewhere in us we know that there's a truth to them. But we don't want to take the steps to do anything with them, to take the next step, to do a workshop, to do an advanced training. I just talked with somebody about this tonight, Linda, joining a committee, getting involved, participating. And again, it's for no reason other than it's for you. Because of those of us on the board and I certainly and some other people in the room who have trained in this discipline for, you know, many, 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 many years, know what's waiting there for you if you really invest in your own training. And the guide stresses over and over again, we can't do it on our own. You can't go home and practice your meditation and your journaling and your daily review and move. We're too much slugs. We need to be challenged and confronted. And so that's why we have very purposefully scheduled for you in particular, this particular group of people who come for First Wednesday, a Fences workshop. We're scheduling it for one day because we thought some of you would not be ready to make a commitment for a whole weekend or to go into an advanced training in order to grow yourself and transform at that next level. We're making it easy. It's reasonable. It's $125. $25 of that will go to the board so that we can give scholarships and put on more programs. The rest of the money goes to the teacher. We don't get that money. But the guide says that regarding this workshop, that we ourselves put up the fences that stop us from having what we most want and long for in life. Life doesn't do that to us. We do that, and we want to keep doing the work that we get more and more aware, deeper and deeper of how we do that. So I want to urge you to go online, find about the workshop of Fences, and register. We have two wonderful teachers coming from Pittsburgh. It's going to be a dynamic, exciting day. Yes, Judy?
How big is the workshop?
We're holding it to 20. And if more than 20 register, they'll be willing to come back and do it again. These leaders are very exciting and fun and dynamic. What else did I want to say about that? I guess that's it. Barbara Jean and Billy, I have asked them to put themselves out there a bit and risk a bit and talk about how it has been for them to move from doing workshops for a long time, I mean doing First Wednesday for a long time, and then taking the risk to move into doing a workshop. So, Billy, why don't you go first, and then Barbara Jean. They'll take about 5 minutes apiece to...
Oh, I'm not going to take that long. Yeah. I don't think. That's a long time.
Oh, just wait. Till we're
done. It would be really funny if I read what you wrote, and you'd have nothing to say. So, if I had it, I would be so tempted to do that. Hi, everybody. So I was invited to do, many years ago, a workshop for the first time, and for 2 years, a transformational workshop, and for 2 years I resisted it. Mostly, it was a weekend workshop, I really valued my time, and I really didn't want to spend the money, and finally I did it, and it was the best thing I ever did for myself. And now, with what Sue has brought to Pittsburgh, I'm actually in a three-day workshop virtually every month for 2.5 years. And it's incredibly valuable. I wouldn't do it if it wasn't valuable, but I also wouldn't do it if it wasn't fun. Because I wouldn't be able to sit there that long. And if you have never done transformational, this is the whole point of the people who are in the transformational program, we're doing all these workshops all the time. If you haven't done a full day workshop, you really want to give yourself that experience. And I promise you, if you do this with the two people who are coming from Philadelphia who are both brilliant and really avid, and they prepare so much and they're so passionate, that it will transform your experience of how you're spending your time. And you're going to want to do more of them. And I was reading the workshop. The main thing that I love about it is the intimacy. So you got someone like, Peg in your workshop. It's like Peg's in your workshop. Like, she just shares so intimate. So it doesn't matter. Like, you might say, well, I'm not the kind of person who wants to stick my hand up and share in a workshop and actually interact with, and that's what it's all about, is most of the workshop, it's not about reading lecture from the front of the room, it's about interacting and breaking through. And you might never raise your hand the whole time, but watching other people work, watching Barbara Jean work and Pam and Joanne, that, it cracks you open. And yep. You wind up, you're laughing and you're crying. You know,
saying yes, it cracks you open, and
you leave bigger, fuller, more connected. And so I try to think about what held me back from getting in my first workshop, and I think the guide said it really well. The guide said, imagine in this Fences workshop, in the Fences lecture, the guide says, and it's not about the lecture. It really, the lecture is like the background of what happens. Imagine wide open spaces containing all the beauty of the world, all that an individual could possibly require for his or her enjoyment. But people do not see these wide open spaces. They do not see the powers, forces, assets, beauty surrounding them. And the fences could instantly be removed with one gesture. And so if you've never done a workshop before, I really strongly invite you to remove that fence with the one gesture of registering for it. Thanks.
Thanks, Billy.
Do you want the microphone?
I don't think so.
Thank you.
Welcome. I came to First Wednesday for a while, and when he was getting started, I talked about maybe I would do it, and then I thought about the time commitment, and I thought about the financial commitment, and working with a helper, and I thought, I've done a lot of different types of personal work, and thought I kind of got grumpy about it, it's so much and I can't do it. And then in really working more on the board and working with the lectures, I began to realize that I wanted to take the next step and really take more workshops and see what would happen. And I found that I'm someone who can hide very well, and I can be somewhat articulate, but I don't always really share in a more honest, open way. I mean, I share as openly as I know how, but it's not really what I'm capable of. And what I found is that doing the work within the workshops, the support and the energy that we create together, and the guidance from the people who are leading the workshops, I found myself saying things that I was surprised that I was saying to a group of people that I didn't even know all that well yet. And then in some workshops, after I've gotten to know people, and you know, I've taken workshops for a few years, still amazed that, wow, I'm coming to understand the ways that I block pleasure in my life, that I block love, saying, I really want more love, and yet I am not feeling like I deserve love. Or I'm not really responding in a loving way to others, so how am I inviting that natural give and take? Or when others are offering love, I have a hard time receiving it, and so I don't notice it, or I quickly turn away from it, or I get scared. So what I have found is that the more I'm actually doing the work, the more the work is working through me, and that there's certainly transformation is not something I have any control over, but I can participate in letting go of the ways I block transformation from happening. And I can be with a community of people who can look at me and say, Joanne Brinkley's not here, but she has said to me, you know how people used to say my anger was a shield? I think your weight's the same kind of shield. And she can say that to me from a place of love, not a place of condemnation. And I can begin to look at it and say, yeah, it is a way that I protect and I blocked and I kind of prove that I can't. So it's more about owning negativity in a community of support and honesty and being more transparent with myself and others. And I really am glad that Sue did the person at, the PT group, so that I was at a place I was ready to accept it. And doing that more work with people, the 10 of us that have worked together, and now 9 of us are working together, there's a deepening of openness and intimacy. So I am doing the Fences workshop because I do hinder myself a lot, and I want to let go of the ways I hinder myself. And I invite you to join me and come to it if there are ways that you know you hinder yourself, because I believe in working with it together will create some energy to open up places that we haven't, and then you can continue the work in the other workshops and the other first Wednesdays here, and you'll have a sense of community. So that's my experience. Thanks.
Thanks,
so all you have to do is go online, right, Billy?
Just go to PittsburghPathwork.org.
PittsburghPathwork.org. There's a flyer there. Order Billy to get your registration, and you'll be online to go. Okay, Billy, slide 2. This whole year is going to be on spiritual practices. We're going to learn about meditation. We're going to be doing prayer tonight. We're going to do the daily review, how to do a practice that you find out, get in touch with what your negativities were that day. We're going to be doing the spiritual meaning of relationships, like how your relationships with your parents or your lovers or your spouses or your kids can actually become your spiritual practice, and much, much more. The guide says, again, that it's not enough just to be fascinated with these beautiful principles that you resonate with. You know, like those of you who are in this room, there's something here that called you, that moved you, that, you know, it's like there's some truth here. But staying fascinated with the principles and not buckling down to do the work to have them penetrate our lives, we won't be born anew. And that's what we're working here, is it's really to become born anew so that we create different drives and different intentions than the ordinary ones that we were conditioned by or that we unconsciously put in place. Okay, Billy, got it? You know, so mainly we all got our sense of God from our religious traditions or the religious traditions that pervaded our world. People on a more progressive, liberal path came to feel that God was being taught in the churches and the synagogues and mosques in a way that felt irrelevant and outdated and not helpful. And so in turning away from these traditional teachings, they kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater. God got debunked altogether. On the other hand, those who are on a more conservative path have tended to stay stuck with an ancient understanding of God, and the lack of dynamism in their understandings have left them with a God that's not large enough for the evolving consciousness in the world that is becoming increasingly inclusive and diverse. When in pathwork we speak of God, we're not referring to a particular religious tradition. Rather, we are referring to the ultimate reality in the universe, the source of all things natural. God, the creator of the spiritual laws that have been for all time and for all peoples and always will be. Another way of saying it is that the design of the natural God-filled universe that we did not create, we are rather the benefactors of it, is loving connection. Everything that exists is provided for in the natural flow of life in a rhythm of giving and receiving and loving. And God, the universe, is the author of this grand design, not us. We can learn to live in right relationship to it, but we can't make it and we can't break it. God, the universe, is the great mystery, but this much we know for sure. There's a lot we don't know. But we know this not merely because we believe it, but for those of us who have been on the path for a while, experience it. God is love. The source of life is love. The essence of life is love. This is the God that we seek in pathwork. We seek love. And we seek it by discovering all the ways that we are not love, all of our blocks to loving. So seeking God, the guide says, is the most glorious, meaningful, and fulfilling endeavor in life. And there's a premise in transpersonal psychology, which pathwork is a part of, that says that planted in the soul of every living being is a longing for God, for the divine. But because we are so layered up with our walls and defenses that were meant to defend and protect us from our wounds, and because we have learned from our culture and we've absorbed materialism that gets perpetuated by our families and society and culture, which says that materiality, and that means nothing other than having and achieving and accomplishing and power and status and fame and beauty and wealth and power and quest, is what matters most. And this is what cuts us off from the deepest of our longings, which is to seek God. So the wall of our personality is what separates us from God's grace and mercy and love. And it must be breached. We actually don't understand the longing that we have for God, and we misplace it onto other things like having more and better of everything, thinking that that will answer the hunger, but it doesn't. There is nothing that can fill the need for God but God. There is nothing that can fulfill the need for love but love. And it is not something we need to learn to do. It is an alive place in ourselves to get to where love and God live. Mm-hmm. One of the most powerful things that the guide taught me in terms of the impact on my life is when we are longing for the love from another, when we are suffering the lack of love for another, we are actually longing for the love that lives inside of us that we are cut off from. God is a merciful God. And God would not have created a universe that every single one of us, regardless of our station in life, whether we're starving in India or we're a high-powered CEO executive, all of us have access to the potential of the love that lives in our own souls and our own hearts, and that's where our true fulfillment and satisfaction comes from. Let's go. So we become pathfinders by traveling into the dark wilderness and the jungle of our faults and our difficulties and our negativities. We must turn into and toward, not away from, our darkness. And this seems very counterintuitive. Again, our human pride makes this very challenging. We want to see ourselves and we want others to see us not as we are, right? But as we wish we were or how we would want to be. That's how we want to be seen. We want to pretend. Pathwork is asking us to do the opposite. Rather than blaming others for their faults and negativities, which is the most natural thing in the world to do, right? Raise your hand. It's the most natural thing, and it comes totally naturally. We are being asked instead to do something that doesn't come naturally, which is to look fiercely and rigorously into ourselves for our faults and our limitations and our negativities. And it's not easy. It's actually very painful. Right? People who are in PT and TP and program work, it's not a fun process. So the guide says that this journey is not for the faint of heart. It takes courage and it takes humility that we need to call forth from our divine nature. Either way, we're going to suffer. We're going to suffer by going into and facing our darkness and our negativity. And we're going to suffer if we don't. The suffering that we face by knowing our limitations and our negativities and our brokenness is a suffering that can lead somewhere. It can lead to transformation and more light that come into our beings. The suffering that we suffer because we refuse to do that, that we deny that about ourselves, the pain grinds on and on and on and on in a helpless, dark, dead, despairing, empty depression. So if we're going to suffer, why don't we choose the one that will lead somewhere and will lead to the light? All right, Billy is going to do a wonderful jungle meditation for us.
So I'd like to take you through a 5-minute meditation visualization to put some powerful imagery to the work we're going to be doing tonight. And to that end, I'd like to invite everyone to just relax, take everything off your laps, if that makes you more comfortable, get into a comfortable position, take some deep breaths, deep cleansing breaths. Relax. And when you feel comfortable, you can let your eyes go closed. If if you like. Just relax and take some more deep breaths, relaxing breaths. As you keep taking relaxing breaths, I'd like you to imagine that you are an early explorer of a jungle in Central America. The jungle growth is very dense, and so you look for higher ground to get a sense of the terrain. You see a mountain and endeavor to climb it for a full vista of the land. On the first day, you set out with all your gear, and no sooner do you begin than you realize there is no path to the mountain. You have to make it. You have to hack away at the wild jungle growth. It's slow going, sometimes taking hours to just go a few hundred feet. You vacillate between determination and hopelessness. At last, after days, you reach the mountain base and begin your ascent. Still, there is no path. You lose all sense of north, south, east, and west in the jungle, and just keep moving diagonally up the mountain. At one point, you look down and see a river and notice an oxbow bend in it. You hear wild animals. You struggle to find food. Days pass, and when you look down, you see that same oxbow bend in the river and think, holy heck, I've not made any progress whatsoever. I've been going in circles. But then you think, wait a second, the river is smaller than before. Perhaps I am getting somewhere. And as you hike up a mountain, in a spiral. Each time around the mountain, the river looks the same, but it's smaller and smaller. Despite bouts of hopelessness, there is definite progress in the path you have created for yourself. Just like your problems and frustrations, some of them never seem to go away. But on the path, your relationship to them is more powerful as you navigate another round in the spiral of your life. Your problems and frustrations don't hook you as strongly anymore. There is a sense of freedom and ease, a personal power you didn't know you had. From time to time, you find yourself actively choosing to let go of the struggle and actually enjoy the amazing beauty all around you. When you finally get to the top, you take a look around. Your body feels made stronger by the struggle. Looking around, you breathe in the beauty, splendor, and majesty of nature's bounty. You've made it to the top of this mountain, a wonderful accomplishment. And now there are other mountains to climb. There is nowhere to get in pathwork, except as more and more light comes in with the acceptance of doing the work. Mountains are easier and easier to climb. The precipices eventually don't feel like precipices at all. The shrubs give great texture to life, as facing the next challenge transforms from something fearful or burdensome to an exciting adventure. Take a few more cleansing breaths and breathe in the possibility of freedom and ease in moving through life. And when you're ready, allow your eyes to open and come back to the room.
Thank you, Billy. Most of the problems that exist in our lives, in the area of our relationships, managing our lives, our friendships, our finance, our job satisfaction, our school satisfaction, comes as a result of our own negative beliefs and attitudes and distortions and misconceptions. I'm inferior, I'm stupid, the world is not safe, I'm worthless, you're worthless, men are bad, women are cruel. These inner realities will manifest in our lives in terms of what we magnetize, what we draw to us, what we create. I'll always be poor, life is unfair, I'll be rejected. Deep negative core beliefs that we have created ourselves. The guide says that most of our problems can be traced back to one of three major characteristics to our lower self, our negativity: pride, self-will, and fear, which we will be cracking open shortly. The guide talks about in this lecture how our negative thought forms don't just exist in theory. They exist in physical reality. They actually form thought forms in the cosmos that have an impact. So, you know, an example of that is that not only did the Germans create Hitler, humanity created Hitler, which we are a part of, because we created the thought forms of, from our own unnegativity that manifested a Hitler in the world. So what we can do for ourselves, and it's what we're talking about tonight, is to face those negativities in us, our negative thought forms, and transform them into thought forms that are life-giving. And we'll talk about how to do that when we get to prayer. Number 8, Billy. So the guide says that the three main negativities in the human condition, and everything kind of falls out from that. The first one is pride, pretending that we are more than we actually are. And it's our human pride that has us think that we should be something other than exactly what we are. I am what I am. Without justifying it. Just to stand in the vulnerability and the powerfulness of the truth of who we are and where we are right now. It's our pride that has us hide our faults and our character defects and fiercely defend ourselves if someone dares to show us one of them. According to pride, it's just not okay to be exactly as we are. It throws us into a state of worthlessness. And so we pretend, and we hide, and we suffer personal alienation and disconnection from others because of it. This is the defense of the reason type. Next. Self-will. Isn't this great? I want what I want when I want it, regardless of the impact on others. The little ego seeking control. And other human beings are usually the casualty in our need for control. We lose touch with our impact on others. I was just having a conversation with someone about this today. And so we can walk over, we can trespass, we can crush, we can diminish in our mad pursuit to do what we want to do and to have it our own way, whatever way that is. This is often the defense of the rule type. Anybody familiar with that one? And finally, fear. And fear, when the lower self is in charge here, we make ourselves small inside so that others will take responsibility for us. I won't dominate you with force like the will type will. I'll control you with my weakness. I can't, you can. You have it, I don't. The belief is that you have it, whatever it is, and I don't, and I've got to have it from you. I deserve it from you, your time, your money, your attention, your love, your help, etc. This is often the defense of the love type. Okay, Billy? So the guide says that all of our faults and all of our problems actually fit into a whole, and they're all connected to each other, and they're all related to each other, and that we actually create a vicious circle from our package of faults, and that we tend to have the same faults for a whole lifetime. We just get better and better and better and better at them. Anybody notice that? You have the same ones that you had when you were 11, 19, 21, 15, 76. Okay, so I just want to give you one example of how the vicious circle works, and maybe you can do a little practicing in figuring how yours works. I'm actually going to use the example of my father, who is no longer with us, but because he's a perfect example of how the vicious loop worked. Okay, so let's start. Just imagine a great big circle. I used to bring big newsprint in. I don't do it anymore, but just imagine there's a big circle. At the top of the circle, my father was extremely passive and did not have a lot of positive assertion, ability to, like, he was a businessman, ability to stand up for himself. Okay, so because he didn't do that, we're moving around the circle, people took advantage of him. There were ways that he couldn't do what he needed to do because he didn't have enough positive assertion. Okay, so we're going to move on down around the circle. So that caused him to not get things done that he needed to get done, and so he couldn't be very successful. And so move on around the circle. So he felt bad about himself and weak. And so go back up to the top of the circle so he couldn't stand up for himself. And so that's the vicious loop. And we all have vicious loops that are just like that. And the guide says we need to keep working with them and see how this fault causes this fault and causes this fault and causes this one until we go around and we start around again and again and we're stuck in a vicious circle. So I thought the one of my dad was like a really great example. I'll give you a couple of other ones just so that you can start playing with it for yourself. Okay, another one would be, I'm not safe, top of the circle. So that's the fear, that's the negative core belief, love type. So I'm going to try, maybe will type, I'm going to try and control everything, okay, because I don't feel safe. All right, of course I come to something that I can't control. Because we can't control everybody. I'm scared to death because I didn't control it, so I don't feel safe. So here we go, round and round in this vicious loop. Let me see if I can give you one more. Okay, here's a real good one. It was taught in a recent workshop. I feel unlovable, so I demand to be loved. I keep pulling at somebody to love me and give me what I want, what I need. When I do that, what are they going to do when I do that? Okay. They're going to run away. They're going to resist. Okay, and what happens to me when they resist?
I feel
unlovable. So here we go. So what I want you to do is start looking for, like, what your vicious loop might be like. Yes, Trudy.
Fear. Do we have many vicious
loops? We have many vicious loops, yes. Yes. So I want to finish with this one and one more before we take a little break. So the guide says start looking. First of all, make a list of your faults. And then start looking how they're connected and see how they form a vicious loop. And then start looking for how they deviate from divine law. And I gave you a sheet of universal divine laws, so you'll have that to work with. And the most interesting thing is that our biggest faults are, in fact, a distortion of something that is very beautiful and divine in us. Like, for instance, using my dad as an example, he was a very truly loving human being, very loving. But it was love run amok. It was love and distortion. Someone who was really powerful, you know, and dominates other people and runs all over other people and has to get done with it, their divine attribute and distortion would be what? What? Self-will. Order. So what's the divine?
In non-distortion or in distortion?
Yeah,
no, not in distortion.
Healthy power.
They're healthy power, amazing power. What they could do if they clean that distortion up and just own that beautiful power. So the guy says that we go over and over and over the distortion until we start getting conscious. Again, this is all about owning and seeing and taking responsibility for it. Billy, the next slide. Then what happens is that the circle starts becoming a moving, dynamic spiral. Rather than stuck, it starts to move. And as we move along that journey, more and more God comes in to be with us as we move along. Yes?
And that's why I was thinking about myself, why in therapy it's been impossible, because each issue is its own separate issue, and it feels like I'm dealing with a million issues where had I known about this and so
they're all connected.
Exactly.
And start sitting down with paper and pencil and figuring out what's the circle and how are they, how does this create this? Yeah.
Rather than castigating myself for a million issues that
they're all a big whole package.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they have a divinity in them if we start to clear them up. They have a very, very beautiful divinity in them. Let me see if I want to do a little bit more before we take our break. I'm going to do a little bit more and then we will have a break. 13, Billy. I love this, that the faults that we do not face in ourselves cut us off from God. What a price to pay. And the guide is not saying don't have faults. We have faults. The guide is saying don't not face your faults. That's what cuts us off from ourselves, from each other, and from God. And the next one. And our faults faced and owned and taken responsibility for are our path to God. How ironic is that? That which is broken in us is what takes us to the divine. Number 16, and then we'll take a break. What's 15? Oh, okay, there's no greater pain than the estrangement from one's true self. You know what we think? We think that our pain is because I'm too fat, I'm too stupid, I don't have enough class, I don't have enough education, you know, all those things that we obsess and suffer about. The guide says that those are ruses. Our greatest pain is that we are disconnected from the God, the love, the beauty that lives inside of us. That's our greatest pain. And we just misplace it. We put it the wrong place. But we're cut off from our wellsprings and our sources. Okay. A pathfinder. Okay, so the guide is telling us to become a pathfinder. A daily practice, and Barbara Jean, when we come back from break, is going to teach us how to do that, of looking at our faults and seeking help and support from other people, like in the classroom, first Wednesday, workshop, getting a helper, you know, someone who is going to really support and help us do this work, because we can't do it on our own. And finally, a pathfinder seeks help from God, humbles ourselves and says, I've done the work I can do, God. Now, please embolden me, strengthen me, show me the truth, show me the light, so that I can get closer to the goodness that is within me. Okay, a little bit over, but we're going to take about a 10-minute break. And check in with each other, have some coffee, some fruit, you know, fill up. Let out, do what you need to do.
Put your feet down and really see if you can feel into the earth. And as you feel into the earth, you may feel your spine. And what we're going to do now is an active way to work with daily review or prayer. Throughout lecture number 36 on prayer, the guide describes prayer as the path of actively identifying and working with the ways we block ourselves from our true divine nature, from God. The guide further states that prayer allows us to put our own intentions into practice and opens us to be more receptive to God's grace, God's help, God's love, God's light, which are always available. So we're not creating that. We're receiving, more open to receiving that when we actively pray. The daily review is a systematic prayer practice that helps us compassionately recognize where we're living in accordance to divine law and where we're off track with ourselves and divine law. The daily review helps us develop a stronger conscious ego. A conscious ego is the part of ourselves that's always in truth, compassionate, and an objective witness of reality. The practice also helps us distinguish our conscious ego, that part of ourselves that's always in truth, compassionate, an objective witness to reality, from our lower self. Those aspects of ourselves that are mean and cruel and reactive and are recreating childhood hurts without even realizing it. And in this way, the daily review enhances our ability to connect with our higher self, recognizing those negative aspects of ourselves, and connect with that within us, which is our own divine spark, our own inner wisdom, our ultimate goodness and God within us. Regular practice of the daily review supports us to develop an honest and open relationship with ourselves and others, so that we can become more receptive to God's loving presence at work in our lives. We're going to do an exercise now, a brief exercise, just so you can have a brief experience of the daily review. And it's kind of a bit of a teaser, because we're going to spend the whole next first Wednesday also working with daily review and the lecture on it. So now I'm going to invite you to take a deep breath in and bring your ears to your shoulders to your ears. Bring your ears to your shoulders. And exhale and drop. And take a deep breath in and bring your shoulders to your ears. And exhale and drop. And take a deep breath in and bring your shoulders to yours. And exhale and drop. And now, if you're comfortable, close your eyes and take 3 deep breaths. And as you breathe, settle into yourself, becoming more and more aware of yourself in this moment. And as you're settling into yourself, take a moment and invite yourself to become more aware of your own higher power. ask for help to increase your awareness of all aspects of yourself, including those aspects of yourself that you enjoy, those aspects of yourself that you celebrate, those aspects of yourself that you're uncomfortable with, those aspects of yourself that you resist. And seek guidance from your higher self to be compassionate and loving toward all of yourself, including your negativity and your most divine stirrings. And from this attitude of compassion and openness to your own higher power, your own higher self, allow yourself to reflect on your day. And if you want, you can journal or you can simply do this part in your mind, but think of what are some things that actually you enjoyed today, that went smoothly or that you were pleased with, or that you were surprised by. We call these harmonies, things that we got our needs met, we felt good about. Maybe it was that I took a risk speaking to someone about something that was troubling me, and I was able to do that without a lot of animosity, but with openness and honesty. Or maybe it was that I took a step with integrity towards myself, and I stopped some sort of self-harm that I'd been doing. Or maybe it was that lovely gift that came out of the blue in the mail that I just helped me remember how much this friend cares for me. But something that went well today is a harmony. And if you have paper and pen, you can just jot down one or two or three of those on a list. And if you don't and want paper or pen, raise your hand and we'll bring it to you. We're just going to take a moment. So just on the list, just one or two words. And then let yourself reflect on, were there any areas today, any experiences you had where you felt out of sync? Where you felt like you were reactive and kind of having a temper tantrum, but it was so, so well done that hardly anyone would notice? Or maybe when you were gossiping because you were really angry at somebody, but you didn't take adult action and you kind of, to your neighbor, ended up gossiping about them at work? Or maybe it was that you cut someone off on the road, or someone cut you off and you got very angry. We call these disharmonies. Take a moment and just jot one or two or three of those that come to mind. And if you at least have one of each, that's great. I'd like you to look at your list and pick one harmony. And just, this is just a brief experience, so just for 1 to 2 minutes, write about what you enjoyed about that one harmony. What need was met? What did you value in the experience? Notice any conclusions you came to about yourself, about God, about life, in that positive experience. And just take a moment and maybe just write one sentence about what stands out to you from that harmony. And then when you're ready, do the same with the disharmony. Write at least one sentence about one of your disharmonies and note what you found most challenging. What need was not met? What need was blocked? Or what did you value that you didn't feel someone else or life valued with you? Notice what you learned about yourself or what conclusions you came to about life, about yourself, about relationship. And just write one sentence down. And then you can go back over the sentence or two you wrote about your harmony and sentence or two you wrote about your disharmony and look at, were there any divine laws at play? Where was conscious ego, that part of you that's always in truth, that is always compassionate? Was that anywhere there? Was there the lower self, that part of you that kind of wants what you want when you want it, that's mean and cruel and just has to have it? And does it seem familiar patterns there? We're not going to work with it further, but it can be helpful just to note. And in either of them, did you see any glimpses of your higher self wanting to give guidance or giving support? Just notice that for a moment and just write down one or two sentences about what you notice. And now I'd like you to give yourself a moment to finish up what you're writing and notice what's standing out to you most, knowing that you can come back and work with this, and hopefully the handout will help you do that, and the next lecture for the next month will help you do that, and then we'll work with it even more. But when you're ready, go ahead and close your eyes again. Or just come to a place of connection deep inside and invite your higher self to be present to you in a way that you can most experience your higher self in this moment. And take 3 deep breaths. Appreciate your willingness to learn about yourself, your willingness to name harmonies and disharmonies, and begin to look at how you participate in what you create in your life and the consequences of that. And you may want to make a commitment to yourself at this time that you will engage in this practice or in another prayer practice so that you can get greater clarity of how you block and where you're open to your higher self and spirit within you. And ask your higher self for any specific help that you would like at this time, or anything that higher self or God wants you to know, and be open to hearing it through an image or a sensed feeling, or even the possibility that after you leave tonight, something will come to you in your dreams or in music in the radio, and you'll know, hey, this message is for me. And take a moment to thank your higher self for being there with you and communicating to you. Even if you're not quite sure what it is that you're meant to understand, trusting that you will know and it will come to you. And when you're ready, take a deep breath, wiggle your hands and your fingers, and as you open your eyes, let your eyes stay soft and let the images come to you. So, this was a snippet, just a small snippet of the experience. Hopefully, you'll work with it some, and we'll work more with it next month. Anyone want to share just anything about what that experience was for them? Just one or two words.
I have to be willing to share what my harming was, I guess.
Okay.
It comes in weird places where I connect with somebody that was almost like an angel or something. I mean, somebody, it was so mundane that you just wouldn't even. So this was a Sprint person I was on the phone with. And he was helping me install some equipment. And usually it's just like, you know, I draw a blank that I can't do with this stuff. And so everything went in place. Like, I just knew when it was up, where to put this, and where to, and this was for my range enhancer. So, like, this person was so patient. He walked me through, and he called me back if we had to wait for something to boot up. And I just felt so good that I was able to do this independently on my own, and this person spent some time with me.
So I'm going to stop you for a second, but can you say one thing that you got out of that experience that you enjoyed the most?
I got such a high.
So you felt really good about
it? I got a high from it. I'm just feeling so good. It's something so mundane that I would have thought would have been a world of pain.
Great. That's a great harmony. Thank you. So I know that we have to get on, but if you have any other questions, feel free to ask me at the end. Thank you.
Thanks, Reverend Jean.
Thanks,
Rosa. Okay, Billy, if we can quickly run through these slides so we'll have time to do the meditation at the end. Take a moment to read that. Prayer is basically when we set aside our ego, our usual way of doing things, and we lift ourselves, our problems, the pain with our enemies, the suffering of the world, up into truth and goodwill, and we open ourselves to ask for help from God, from the universal streams, that God will come in and bless us. Next slide, Billy. The thing about prayer is that it takes practice like every other skill or tool that you have to learn. And when you start out, you're going to feel self-conscious and awkward and just like you do in a new relationship. And so that's what you need to say to God. This feels uncomfortable. I feel self-conscious. This is unfamiliar. I don't quite know how to do this. But here I am, God, trying. And as you do it more and more and more, like all relationships will become familiar, that relationship will become familiar for you as well. 19, exploring the resistance. You have to know that you will resist it. You'll resist meditation, don't want to do it, don't have time to do it. And that's just the way we are. We're devoted to running our ordinary agenda, my list, you know, my TV, I gotta take a break, I gotta rest, I don't have the time, gotta do my list. We're devoted to that. We don't want to be bothered with transforming our lives. So we have to know that about ourselves, accept that about ourselves, and rise above it again and again and again, because we're going to resist. 19, okay, 20. The most important thing here is to understand that prayer is not about being a good person. It is about opening ourselves up to the goodness that's available to us in the universe. And we're opening ourselves up to the universe, God's grace and goodness. And it's very alive. We talk with God about what's on our mind and heart today. I feel stuck here. I feel mad there. I need help here. And out of that prayer being honest, things start to shift for us. Really? Okay, who do we pray for? We pray especially for our loved ones, especially for those who have hurt us. Even though we have negative energy, we are feeling full of hatred, and we don't want to, we pray for them anyway until eventually that negative energy starts to melt away. And the guide says, certainly we need to plan, pray for the plan for salvation, that all humankind will begin to face our lower self and transform it so that we can connect with the goodness in us. And pray for self. Make sure you take your own faults into prayer, that you be honest about your faults. You bring an attitude of goodwill, which is, I accept this about myself. And how am I deviating from spiritual law? And ask for help and guidance from God. All right, Billy, I know you got to get to the Pirates game, so I'm rushing through here.
It's already started.
Well, there's a certain point in the Pirates game. Okay. So, obviously, the benefits of prayer is that it gives us humility. It's like giving our psyche a bath, giving it a shower. You become kinder out of praying. And it's like our life, you can do the next one, our life starts to become a prayer, moment by moment by moment. A concern will come up, I'll pray about it, I'll see how I am deviating from divine law, and we just start living that way when we have practiced it enough. Okay, what's next? Then let's do our exercise.
Oh, I think you wanted to do it. Oh, okay, got it.
Okay. And finally, whatever you intention you have for what you want to create, whether it's to become more compassionate, whether it's to draw more love in your life, whether it's to find the love that's within you, that intention is greatly empowered through the power of prayer. We can't just like think about it. We need to pray about it, and we will create new life forms and new soul patterns that we will manifest from in life. Okay, let's go. Right.
Okay. Okay. This is going to be good. We're going to do an exercise, and for this exercise, I want you to think of an issue that you're really upset about. Okay, so we get to be upset. We start beginning to be upset, so that's always fun. Something you have a lot of energy about, reaction to, negative feelings about, you know, how ordinary consciousness works, just something you're upset about. So I'll give you an example. You won't need to share this with anyone, or any part of this process with anyone. So an example I've used in the past, some of you have heard that I had hired a contractor to help with my biggest client. I do software stuff, and he did database stuff. So this database contractor had to work with this client, and then a year and a half later, the client and the contractor went off and did a project kind of behind my back. They intentionally didn't tell me, and I found out about it, because I had to find out about it, because I was still working with the client. And he was long story short, but the bottom line is, I felt completely betrayed by both this contractor I had brought in and this client was still my client, and the contractor, so I still had to like How did I deal with this? I'm like completely furious. It's going to significantly impact revenue I'll get. And how do I even interact with these people? I'm just, they're horrible human beings, or so I had it. So for you, I don't know what your incident might could be. Something about something that's happening at work that's driving you batty, something at home, your kids, your family, your mother, your father. Perhaps you're just really, really frustrated and annoyed with not having the relationship you desire, and maybe it's like hopeless about it. That would be a good one to bring. Or maybe you're upset with yourself and you can't let yourself off the hook about something. So anything that upsets you. So do you need more time to have it? Everybody have one? You need a...
Several.
Yeah,
okay. All right,
wait.
Pick one.
Just pick one. Okay, again, you're not going to have to share this with anyone. All right. Okay, so for the next part, I'm going to invite you to write this in your journal, just to think hard about your issue. I want you to recall thoughts you've had in your past about it, the thinking you've brought that hasn't really maybe made much difference, except to get you more and more annoyed. What are the judgments you've had about your issue? Just write some of these down. Things that annoyed you about the issue, judgments about it. You know, my judgment was that the contractor and client were wrong. They were disloyal, they were dishonest. What emotions do you have about the issue? I was angry, I was rageful, I was frustrated, and I felt this powerlessness. So any powerlessness, rage, frustration, sadness, fear, anger, allow yourself to get revved up about it, thinking about it. Just let it go, let it rip, don't hold back. You know, what about your issue is just plain unfair? What about your issue is out of your control? What about your issue, you know, could get worse? What's the worst that could happen? Okay, you actually don't need to write anymore, but I just want you to check in right now with how you feel in your body, mind, and spirit. Just check in and write down a couple of descriptors of how you feel. So we can recall it later and you won't have to share this with anyone. Okay? Got it? Good. Okay, so now we're going to try to impact your issue in another way, via prayer or meditation. So first, see if you can formulate a request from a higher intelligence. So if you're going to ask God or your higher self or the universe or whoever you speak to, your guides, what's a request that you might formulate? Well, my example, it might be, please give me a more spacious, life-affirming, more positive way to be about what happened with my contractor and client. Give me some way to be about this that's not so powerless, that gives me some power and some compassion. Or perhaps it might be, you know, you might ask your higher self, regarding this situation, what's the next most positive thing I can do? Or you might ask, please give me some insight to help me solve this problem. So everybody have a request you can be able to, you're still thinking? Okay, take your time. I'll give you another 30 seconds to come up with a request. This isn't the last request you'll be able to make of your higher self. request? Okay. Now, I'm going to ask you, invite you to go ahead and close your eyes. Take a few deep breaths. It's good to inhale through your nose. Relax your body. Relax your forehead. Relax your jaw. Your shoulders. Your back. Your legs. Your feet. Just relax. And breathe. And ask yourself to be open to hearing from another voice, from a higher voice. And start with a prayer to be receptive. It might be, please let me be open to whatever guidance you have for me this evening. Be open, please, God. Let me be open. Keep breathing. You want to do this exercise more with your feeling body than with your head. So as you continue to breathe, bring an attitude of goodwill. For example, you might think to yourself, I want what's best for the highest good. I want to feel better about my issue, but I want to do it in a way that's for the highest good. Add to this what your lower self is bringing to this with an open attitude. So, I know my lower self is angry and bitter and wants to lash out, and I accept this part of myself. I just don't want it to run my life. And I know that I have to hear from it and acknowledge it, but I don't have to subscribe to it. Now, with your conscious mind, repeat in your head your specific request for help that you formulated. And while you're doing that, I'm going to invite you to stay focused on your breathing and your specific request for help and being open and being receptive and wishing for goodwill. I'm going to play some relaxing meditative music for a few minutes, about 3 minutes, and let you just be with your question and your openness. Thank you. you to notice what it feels like now in your heart, body, mind, and soul. And maybe compare this to how it felt when you were using only your thinking mind. And when you're ready, please open your eyes and bring your attention back to the room. We have time for maybe a couple of quick shares if anyone would like to share their experience of thinking versus praying and meditating. You ready? Hey.
Yes. I felt the one first scenario that you gave.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
The first scenario that you gave,
yeah.
I felt stressed, I felt tight, and very uncomfortable. But after the second time of the meditation, I felt actually relaxed, almost afloat, and soft and receptive.
Wonderful. Did you get any answers to your question?
No, but I'm wondering.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I mean, it can take time. It can take hours, days, but if you are open, you always get an answer. Typically, you know, not that much time. Did anybody get an answer to their question from their higher self? Okay.
Thanks, man. One last slide to say goodnight. I think Billy just gave us a very powerful experience of the difference between processing our issues with our ordinary mind and taking our concerns, our upsets, to prayer. So thank you, Billy. So prayer is, in closing, the path to God, the ultimate reality of goodness in the universe. Do we have
something
to play?
Yes, we do.
We have a song to play, closing and to say goodnight.